This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Breaking news. Savannah Guthrie's mother, Nancy Guthrie, missing day 10. What a night. In the last hours, we have been given video from Nancy Guthrie's front porch. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Let's go straight to the video. He's ready. He's got his hands covered in gloves. Look to be latex, not the thin surgical gloves. Thicker latex. He's wearing a backpack. Hey, jump on that. What kind of backpack? Sold where? When? Leaning over, what is he doing? You're about to find out. Genius pulled some foliage, and he's going to try and cover up the camera with it. He's still trying to get it loose. He's still trying to crack it loose, leaving no fingerprints. Even his wrists are covered up, so we can't see what color he is. But we've got a sneaky suspicion. There you go with the foliage. He's trying to cover up the door cam. He came prepared, full on ski mask. Wrists covered, face covered, hands covered, trying to cover the Nest camera, the door cam. This could be the break we've all been waiting for. There's another video. Here he comes, walking up. And is that a gun he's got tucked into his waistband? Holding his face down? Holding the face down so he won't be identified? Check out the backpack. Reflectors on the shoulders. Come on. Can't we track that? Can we zoom in and get the shoes? We can get his height. We can get so much information. Now let's see the stills off his face. You know what? She may have had a heart attack. She wakes up and sees that. That looks like a white guy to me. A white guy right there. You can't see it. It almost looks feminine. But apparently in some of the pictures, you see facial hair over the lip. It looks like brunette facial hair. Can't tell exactly. Dave Mack, does that look like facial hair over the lip?
It looks like a mustache to me, Nancy. It absolutely does. And below. Below the bottom lip. Looks like chin hair as well, Nancy.
Okay. From that, we are learning so much. Again, it almost looks feminine, except for what we think could be facial hair. Joining us, an all-star panel. This, as we are also learning that buccal or buccal swabs are being taken from the inner circle surrounding Nancy Guthrie, the pool guy, the gardener, the granny nannies, the you name it. And if they're getting buccal swabs from them, I'm sure they've already gotten them from the family. Now, somebody please tell me, we've strapped everybody up to a polygraph. More and more, this seems as if someone close to Mrs. Guthrie is at the heart of her kidnap. And again, the guy walking up, the guy, the person, the perp, walking up. See, he's even got his neck covered, thinking we won't be able to identify what color he is. This is not just a rape, just a robbery, just a burglary. We've been going round and round, some people chasing their tails. Is this really a kidnap? I can tell you right now, nobody goes through all this to run in and grab your VCR. What has he got in the backpack? It is chock full. What's in there? It's stuffed so much you can see when he turns around. He's not going in there to take anything. He's taking things in with him. Straight out to Lee Neubecker, joining us out of Chicago, cybersecurity, digital forensics expert, CEO of Enigma Forensics. What about it, Lee? What do you see?
It's interesting because he hunches down as he goes through the walkway. Had he not hunched down, you could go on site, measure the bricks, and get his height. I did a little bit of looking and making some assumptions, and I think the guy's probably between 5'11 and 6'2". But you can also see his shoe size as he steps on those bricks, like right now. And also the first step.
Hold it. Right there. Yes, yeah, like you're right.
Stop right there. Stop. Yeah, there. You could back up, and if you knew the exact size of that brick, you could probably tell what his shoe size is. He looks like, it appears to be a male based on my review of it, but knowing his approximate height, his approximate weight, and if his hair color truly is black, which it appears to be from the one show, but it could be brown, definitely something to cull. I thought your comments about having the family members take a polygraph was a good idea, but maybe matching up the height of the people to see if they match up at least to the shoe size, which doesn't appear to be larger than size 12.
Oh, it is a man. There's no doubt about it being a man. It's a feminine with feminine attributes, but statistically, this is a man, and it's a freaky white man. Statistically, that's exactly what it is. I'm just wondering, there he is, standing up straight, right there. And I'm wondering if they're going to be able to get any type of height from that. You know, the problem with it, he's not standing right beside something to gauge the height. Lee Newbecker, joining us, Enigma Forensics, explained why he really needs to be standing beside something in order to get an accurate height.
Well, I think there's enough there to discern the height. You can see where his shoulder, when he bends over, you can see how high his shoulder is. Like right there, he's level.
Yes.
So you could do some mapping to the bricks on the side by taking a tape measure out and measuring the sidewall. You'd at least know where his shoulder goes up. And then later on, as he walks forward, his head's lifted, and you can measure the head right about, not there, but as he continues, he lifts his head straight, and he had the brick. So when he was standing back a little bit, there's some ability there. So it's certainly fascinating.
Well, you know, Cheryl McCollum joining me, Cold Case Investigative Research Institute founder, author of a brand new book, Swabs Don't Swim in a Sewer, Solving the Cold Case of Flint River Killer's Daughter. She's the host of a hit podcast, which I play on loop occasionally, Zone 7, and she is a forensic expert. Cheryl McCollum, how many times have you and I worked a case, with blood, sweat, tears, literally working a case at our wits' end, and then God drops a treasure, a miracle in our laps?
Absolutely. And you know, Nancy, it's not just the face that we get. That backpack, I want to talk about that a second, because that backpack is full. It is tight with items. That's a kit. That's not somebody that went there to commit a burglary. There's no room for other items. If you watch, it looks like he is super prepared. He's going to get rid of the camera. He's got a backpack full of whatever he's going to use to do whatever he's fixing to do. But yet he's got to turn around and grab flowers to hide behind to remove the camera. So this is not some pro. Look at the odd placement of this weapon. I mean, everything is just really unusual. But another thing that sticks out for me is the flood cameras that were damaged on the guest house. Again, that looks staged. Why would you damage those cameras? It's nowhere near the front door. We know now for sure he went to the front door, even tried the doorknob first before he did anything else. This seems staged to me. Or either he thought the guest house was the house.
What do you mean it seems staged?
Why else would you damage a camera on the back of the house that you're not even going to? He went in the front door. We know that. Where the blood is, and we know the blood is Nancy's. They've already said that. That was the exit. So if he's only dealing with the front door, why would you damage floodlights on the back of the house? You're not dealing with the back of the house.
Did you think that he tried to go in the back at some juncture?
Either he went there and he realized it was the wrong house because that was the guest house, and then he went to the front door.
Take a look, guys. We are just receiving this in. Every once in a while, out of the blue, you get a break. Now, I'm telling you, this wasn't didn't just fall out of the sky. The FBI have worked long and hard to get this, to retrieve this, because her home camera was not recording. They had to go through a lot of hoops to get this. Joining us is Chris McDonough, director of Cold Case Foundation, former homicide detective, over 300 homicides under his belt. He is the star of The Interview Room on YouTube. Okay, McDonough, analyze.
Well, Nancy, I think, you know, there's a couple things that we can learn here. Number one is the weapon that he's carrying. He's got it in the ready position, and that would tell us he's dominant right hand. So we're looking for somebody, you know, who is right-handed that would fire that weapon. And then we look at his facial hair potentially behind that mask. It looks like he has a mustache and a goatee of some sort, or at least chin hair of some sort. And I agree with Cheryl 1,000%. He has come to this location completely prepared. And then he puts his head down, you know, as he is walking towards the front porch. If you notice the lights in the background, somebody is awake in that neighborhood. So I'm assuming the authorities went over to those houses and canvassed those houses pretty quickly. I also want to know where this suspect's vehicle is. That's going to be a key piece of this puzzle. If he took Miss Guthrie out through that door, because in this video, we're not seeing any blood evidence at that point. So at some point, there has to be another video of him leaving, potentially, or he put the rolling video into his pocket because it was battery operated. Because it wasn't hardwired, it would still send this data up to a server. So there's a vehicle still in play. And at some point, he brings her out of that house, you know, potentially through the front door because her blood is there. Or as, you know, Cheryl's talking about, this is a staging situation where the blood becomes an afterthought. This is after the situation that's already, you know, maybe she's been bound or certain other indicators inside the house, which we don't have data on yet.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Guys, this just in, and I believe there will be more. So, Chris McDonough, I hear what you're saying. Look at what he's doing. Dave Mack, what is he doing right there, trying to dislodge the door cam?
He's looking for something, and we've seen him reaching down to get the some type of shrubbery. But, Nancy, look at his hands. Those gloves, it looks like he's wearing two pairs of gloves. Those things are stretched, and that hand mm-hmm. is much thicker than it would be for a person of his size.
Yes, it does.
And so I'm thinking that over glove, he's got another glove underneath, which kind of goes back to that backpack. Why in the world would anybody come to an event like this with a backpack so filled that, I mean, what else does he need? You're talking about an 84-year-old woman who can't walk. Very far. Why would you need to have your backpack all filled with stuff? So something's really not right. And as you mentioned, taking the camera off, I'm amazed they were able to get this much video from this system based on what they had to go through and how long it took. But I'm still looking at this. It looks like the outfit he's wearing is brand new. It doesn't look like it's been used. Why are they so thick except for wearing two pair?
I wonder if he changed clothes, like if he shed clothes. See what I mean? I had a perp do that before. He robbed a bank in one outfit, a double-breasted suit, hat, wig, you name it. Came out of the bank, stripped it all off. It was basted up the back, and he had another outfit on beneath it, shorts and a short-sleeve shirt. Okay, is it possible? Look, you're right. It does look like his clothes, his hands, his legs are stuffed. Is he wearing another outfit underneath? Let's see him walking up again. Okay, another question to McDonough. Do you see, if you could, control room, please show me a close-up of the weapon that is dangling down from his waist. You stated that was the right hand dominant. Explain.
Well, if you look at his right hand there, immediately he is at the handle of the weapon. So he can reach right over and pull that gun out. If he was left hand dominant, it would have been absolutely, you know, the opposite direction. And so in this situation, we know he's potentially right hand dominant. And if you'll notice also, Nancy, when he comes up onto the porch and then he turns around and goes back towards the debris in the, you know, the area there where he bends over and picks it up, there's a brief second where he felt that maybe something, he had heard something, seen something. He pauses, see him looking right there. So at some point,
yeah, I saw him.
Yes, there's something that spooked him for a brief second. And then he felt, okay, I'm okay. So this is telling us he's very comfortable in this environment because he continued on with that activity.
Can you see which way the handle of the gun?
Yes.
Which side has the handle of the gun, McDonough?
The right side, right where his right hand is. All he has to do is reach over and pull that weapon out of the holster.
I see what you're saying now. You're right. There it is. That right there, that's the shot. That's the shot. You know, holding that shot, I wonder if we could tell what kind of tennis shoes he's wearing. Check it out. Everything matters, but I'm especially intrigued by the backpack, Cheryl McCollum. Why?
Nancy, that backpack is filled, every single pocket. It is stuffed with something. So it makes you think, if this is a kit, is there a tarp? Is there other weapons? Is there something to bind her with, tie her up with? He didn't come there, again, to commit a burglary. He's got no room to put valuables. So this, to me, is critical that they understand that even if you look at the very back when he bends down, even that back pocket, the small pocket, has got items in it. So it tells me that is a kit, like a kill kit.
What do you mean? Why does looking through an opaque backpack tell you he's got a kill kit?
He's got gloves on. He's got a way to cover his face. He's removing cameras. He's removing lights. He did not have to do all of that and then carry more items with him inside the house and make an 84-year-old woman bleed. He went there to do violence. He went there to do harm. The only thing taken out of the house that we've been told is Nancy Guthrie. This tells me whatever was in that bag assisted him in getting her out of that house while bleeding. That was his goal. This was targeted.
The Guthrie family has been notified about these images that have been shared with the FBI, we are told. But according to the family and law enforcement so far, no one recognizes who the person could be. Because there was no recognition, no one could identify this guy. The FBI posted the images and the videos on a public post in the hope and the prayer someone could recognize the perp or even the clothing, which absolutely could lead to a break in the case. Repeat, according to sources, the Guthrie family, no one within the family could identify this perp. And that is why the FBI chose to post the images and videos publicly, hoping and praying that someone would recognize not just the face, the gait, the clothing, but the backpack. Anything about them. Now, the backpack to me is the most identifiable thing about it. Lee Neubecker joining us, cybersecurity digital forensics expert, the CEO of Enigma Forensics. What more can you tell us?
The pattern of the bottom of the shoe could be validated against the size of the block he steps on. And that would be the easiest and fastest way to know what specific shoe and shoe size. With that information, it might ping an Amazon account. It could ping a retail purchase somewhere. When you go to shop and check out at Home Depot or any other retail store, any of the big boxes, they all have security cams, and they feed that data so that intelligence can perform searches when things like this happen. But he has his foot in the snow there when he bent over. And I wonder, you know, did local police, did they take pictures of the sidewalk? Because somewhere there's likely a print there.
Got a question for you, Lee Newbecker. What about purchases of these gloves, this backpack, this face mask, which is also unique? How could it be traced?
Well, there's a database captured. How did someone buy? Did they buy on Amazon for every item? So the most unique items, like the gun holster, the hat, the items, as one of your other guests said, appear to be new and not used. The shoes are the easiest thing, plus the backpack, probably be spotted. Once you get two of those, you can start to search. But presumably, he had a cell phone on him somewhere, too. And if that was on, it might be broadcasting his Bluetooth address, his Wi-Fi address, and the cell phone towers might ping, you know, who was in that area at the time the Ring cam was taken out.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. So let me understand, Lee Newbecker, guys, joining us, CEO Enigma Forensics, how these purchases can be traced. And another thing that should be easily traceable. Well, nothing is easily traceable, but easier to trace. What about that holster? Look at the holster he's wearing. Is that wrapped around his waist and then hanging down? What? Look at that. How could something like that be traced, Lee Newbecker?
Here's a way anyone could do it. Your staff could do it. You could take a screenshot of that. You might have to edit to remove the glove, but if you have the size and you can establish dimensions by correlating to the brick size below, you can then do a Google image search and you can find anything that looks like it. And you might be able to find the same item. But the shoes are going to be the easiest one to match because the patterns on the bottom of shoes are fairly unique. Once you get the shoe, if you can correlate all the people in the area, presumably this person was local, not necessarily, but you got enough items there. If you get the backpack, you get the gloves, or the hat looks fairly distinctive. The stitching around the eyes looks distinctive. You know, there's a number of items there, but searching for those items and finding a combination of them could, like, look right there at the center of the eyes. That's a very unique angle, and the stitching is fairly unique. So, you know, identifying.
You're right, Newbecker. Is that a flashlight in his mouth? I did not see him put anything in his mouth, or is that some sort of reflective material? Let's look at him walking up again. Yeah, you know what? I think you're. Hold on. Back it up. Okay, I see it right there, too. I saw it then, it flashed on and off. I have a hat. I have a skull cap that I wear to all of my son's soccer games, and it has a flashlight built into the front of it. So if he looks up in the stands, he sees me. What is that? I did not see him place a flashlight in his mouth, but he could have done that, and he's using it to try and arrange the foliage. But Cheryl, what do you think it is?
It could be a grill. You know, something that you place on your teeth that's gold or silver that maybe even has a diamond. It looks like something is reflecting off the light. If you look at the flowers, they're illuminated.
Guys, take a look at this. There is the backpack, shoulder strap, close up with a reflective strip on it. Okay, back to you. What were you saying, Lee Newbecker, about his eyes? I believe you and Chris were pointing out the glare in his eyes. What about it?
Yeah, there were two shots. The last one that was held showed that he was looking at the side. It's the camera. The Nest camera has a light that activates at night. At least some of the models do. The white in his eyes when he's looking straight at the camera, the prior version, it showed right in the center of his eyes. It was white. But it looks like he has something in his mouth there. There's a device called a Bite-A-Light. I sent a link to it. It's, you put the flashlight in your mouth. You can tuck it inside your mouth. It's $4. You can bite with your teeth to turn it on or turn it off. And as you saw him lower his head, at one point the light was on, but his shirt started to light up as he lowered his head. So I'm pretty convinced that as he lowers his head, the light's going down. Now up here, you'll notice the light will, everything will illuminate more as he looks at the camera. You can see the flashlight in his mouth. You can see his eyes on the left of the picture. You can see both of his pupils. They're not lit up. It's lit up right below his nose, and he's got something emanating light coming from his mouth. You see that, Nancy?
There you go. You see the zipper? Yes. So good catch, Lee.
Picture,
you're right.
You
hold
contrast,
it. Hold it. Look.
It
look for, there's the bright light to the left. Right below it is a zipper. And if you look up carefully, you do see his eyes. Oh, my stars. Okay. Lee Niebecker, brilliant. Brilliant. Okay. So what does that tell us? What have we learned? What about it, Cheryl McCollum? What does this tell you?
Again, he came prepared.
Cheryl, you're right. So all of the chasing our tails about this being random is BS. So let's don't ever talk about that again. While we're looking at this, at these images, can you imagine Mrs. Guthrie waking up to this in her face? That ski mask? That? Okay, I want to talk about the buccal swabs being taken right now. Dave Mack, who is getting swabbed?
We know that Ms. Guthrie has a lot of help around the house because she is living on her own. She is mentally very, you know, she's perfect there. But I'm going to assume, based on an 84-year-old woman living on her own with physical medical issues, that there is help coming by to check on her. One thing we do know, she has a pool person that takes care of the swimming pool. We do know she has landscape yard people who do the gardening and keep it trimmed up. We also know she has a housekeeper that comes by and cleans inside the house. So all of those people are considered just outside the inner circle. These employees, people who show up every week on a regular basis and know that house and know all the inner workings of the house. Those are the people that are being buccal swabbed this week, right now.
So in addition to the pool cleaner and the gardener, other, quote, hired help. So I can assume, do you agree or disagree, Cheryl McCollum, that the family has already submitted to buccal swabs?
I think so. I think a lot of people have voluntarily come forward. I don't think this is something that anybody's going to give them any trouble with. They want to clear this up. And again, if there was anybody that was hesitant, that would be a clue.
This, as we all are watching the clock, the perp stated, if the ransom note is to be believed, that he, and it is a male, likely a white male, would return Mrs. Guthrie 12 hours after the money was received. The money was received, we believe, yesterday at 5 p.m. Mountain Time. That means the perp has failed in the promise to deliver Mrs. Guthrie, and we've got to ask ourselves what incentive is left to hand her over now that we believe they've got the money. What about it, Niebecker?
Well, I think that they're going to, this vital light that he appears to have in his mouth, which is separate from the Nest camera light, because you can see here there's a shadow under his chin on the last shot. His eyes are illuminated. He's looking directly at the camera, and the white light in his eyes is centered. In other shots, you see it comes at an angle. So there's two light sources here. One light source is slightly ahead.
You're right. And so,
because like this one there, see the shadow under his chin?
Go ahead.
There's several things to notice here. The center of his pupils, he's centered up looking directly at the Nest cam. He's got what appears to be a bite of light in his mouth. You'll see when he's bending over, he turns on a flashlight to find the grass that he grabs. But notice the shadow underneath his chin. Also, as he puts his hand forth, notice the glove. You can see there's a bright light source coming from the front towards the camera. And as this progresses, you'll see when he's got the camera blocked, you can see that there's a light emitting from the camera. The fact that there's a shadow under his chin tells you that the camera's slightly higher than where his eyes are, because that causes the shadow to cast.
Does anyone detect a beard?
I think he has chin hair, Nancy. He's in that one photograph, you can see that he appears to be a darker shade there underneath his lip line. That could be indicative of facial hair. And then, of course, the mustache potentially above that. One other thing I think we're learning here is this gentleman is very, very comfortable doing what he's doing here. As Cheryl pointed out earlier, the fact that he's coming there, you know, with a kill kit potentially, you know, within that bag, and we don't know that for sure, but that would be potentially logical. And the fact that he came with a gun tells us he is prepared to use deadly force, whatever's necessary. And so one of the things I'm concerned about is we're not seeing any of that blood evidence in these photographs here or on this video, because we know that blood.
Well, wouldn't the simple answer be that the blood was dropped when she was leaving, so they wouldn't be on this video?
Yes, but remember the debris that was dropped on that porch. Those photographs that we initially saw had the debris on top of the blood droplets. That look at the upper left-hand corner, the quadrant there where the debris is. Notice that one piece is over the top of the blood droplet. Okay. And those are 90-degree blood droplets, meaning they were straight down. But you'll see the debris is on top of them. So either he, while bringing her out, had kicked his own debris, and she was bleeding, and that would explain that. Or, you know, at some point, you know, how does that debris get on top of the blood? That's the question I have. And what's concerning is she being carried out because, like Cheryl had mentioned, has she been bound, you know, or something to that effect? What's going on? You know, because we know something happened inside that house where he injured her and she was ready, or he was ready, you know, to do that. Evident of the fact that he walked in with the items that he did.
Okay, I'm looking at the debris. What it is gravel around her door, and some of it got on top of the blood. I think one of the reasons she's bleeding is because she's on blood thinner. And I say that because if you look at the picture of her sitting in a lounge chair, which we've shown over and over and over, you can see on her left hand, you can see where she's had bleeding just under the skin. I saw that on my dad, on his hands and his arms from the elbow down, over and over and over. That's what you get when you're on blood thinner, and you may even just barely bump your hand on something, and that's what happens. So that tells me that she's on Eliquis or some other type of blood thinner. Very common if you're on heart meds. It also keeps you from having a stroke. So anything could have made her start bleeding on that front porch. I believe she's standing. You have low-velocity blood droplets there. And if you look at the one furthest to the right, you see a radiation, you see a radius of blood. She's standing still, and she's dropping blood within blood. It's a blood within blood pattern, and it looks like a nosebleed possibly, where blood is dropping within blood. You don't see that she's being carried. You don't see smears. And I bet right there she needed assistance standing. And the gravel is all around the front door. Someone went to her left, or she stepped into the gravel, walking out. That's how I read it. What about it, Cheryl McCollum?
I see it a little different, Nancy. The blood dropped, I agree. But if you look at what you're calling a blood drop, that's not what it looks like to me. That looks like medium to high velocity. It's much further out than you would expect it to be. It doesn't have a pooling with a drop and a drop. If you look down toward the bottom, there is a clear transfer print. Those are the kind of things, again, law enforcement should have captured. They should have collected. They should have focused on. I agree with you. There's no drag marks. Nobody was pulled through that. But we know she has trouble walking. We know she's on blood thinner. So you've got to ask yourself, was she coughing? Was her hand full of blood? Did she touch down? Those are the kind of answers that I want to know about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To me, it looks more like more blood droplets. But you're right. Blood droplets of her just standing there and continuing for blood to drop likely out of her nose. So either way, what Cheryl is saying is correct. These patterns mean something. And the scene was left unsecured. People walked up and took pictures of it. That's where these pictures came from. Totally unacceptable for the crime scene to have been cleared with the blood still there, for Pete's sake. What else do we know at this hour, Dave Mack?
What we know, Nancy, is that as the investigation continues, these pictures just being released, we know that the family, Savannah Guthrie, has seen the pictures, and they're asking people to come forward. Look at the pictures. Look at the video. You know, if that's a loved one, if that's a friend, if that is somebody you know, you can tell by the way the person is walking before they put their head down. They have a certain gait. Take a look at it. You can recognize the person actually knows when to slow down and stop a normal walk. You see it right there. And I'm telling you, Nancy, if that's your husband, if that's your boyfriend, you know who that is. Pick up the phone and call.
Okay, here's a question to Lee Newbecker, joining us, cybersecurity digital forensic expert, CEO Enigma Forensics. If they can pull video from the door cam, what about the other cams, like the one that was aimed down the driveway toward the street? Is there any more footage they can release? What do you think, Lee? Well,
potentially, there might be neighbors nearby that might have captured him getting out of a vehicle. I mean, I'd love to get this raw video, Nancy, because there's things I can do, like color contrasting and other things that might reveal new clues no one's talking about.
As we are all analyzing the most recent evidence, the most recent clues in the kidnap, the disappearance of 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie, let's don't go down the evidentiary rabbit hole, because this isn't a show on Dateline. This isn't a made-for-TV movie. This is real.
Hi there, everybody. I wanted to come on and just share a few thoughts as we enter into another week of this nightmare. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for all of the prayers and the love that we have felt, my sister and brother and I, and that our mom has felt, because we believe that somehow, some way, she is feeling these prayers and that God is lifting her even in this moment and in this darkest place. We believe our mom is still out there. We need your help. Law enforcement is working tirelessly around the clock, trying to bring her home, trying to find her. She was taken and we don't know where. And we need your help. So I'm coming on just to ask you, not just for your prayers, but no matter where you are, even if you're far from Tucson, if you see anything, if you hear anything, if there's anything at all that seems strange to you, that you report to law enforcement. We are at an hour of desperation and we need your help.
If you know or think you know anything about the case, please call 1-800-225-5324. If you wish to remain anonymous, 520-882-7463. We wait as justice unfolds and our prayers go on for the Guthrie family. Nancy Grace signing off. Good night, friends.